Welcome to Intelligent Medicine, America's foremost program on health, medicine, and nutrition, featuring the latest on both conventional and alternative therapies. Now, here's Dr. Ronald Hoffman.
Welcome to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and we've got lots to talk about this hour. We're going to be taking your phone calls, 888-302-3684. I know it's a beautiful day, but take a few moments to call us with your health concern. We'll be happy to field your questions. We've got lots to talk about this hour. And before we get to our busy call boards, let's take a look at one of the big stories of this week was a report that got splashed all over the newspapers. Breakfast bombshell, vitamin overload in cereals may be making kids sick. Oh my goodness. Now kids are at risk because of excess vitamins. This according to a new report from the Environmental Working Group. It shows that added sugar isn't the only thing to watch out for. Wow. Vitamins. Vitamins could be making our kids sick. Well, let's drill down and see what this story is all about. Environmental Working Group, ordinarily a very good organization. We refer a lot of our patients to the EWG.org website because they have great information about mercury in fish and toxic ingredients in cosmetics and pesticides. But here they seem to, well, you know, it's just, there's sort of a lull during the summer. So how do you grab the headlines with lurid claims that vitamins in children's cereals may be making kids sick? And so what are they talking about here? Well, first of all, I am the last person to defend children's cereals. I think it's a really bad idea to take refined grains, often laden with sugar, and sprinkle a little bit of vitamin juice on them, and then claim on the box that they're fortified and that somehow they're going to be really beneficial for kids to eat a lot of. This effort at fortification goes way back because it was noted that people who eat grains and lots of grains develop nutritional deficiency disorders. When they first began to polish rice in Asia, they used to just eat brown rice, but then they began to polish rice. They started to discover an entirely new disease entity, which was beriberi. Polished rice is bereft of the coating of the rice, the germ, that contains a wonderful spectrum of vitamins and minerals, including the B vitamin thiamine, a deficiency of which causes beriberi. So fortifying flour, that's something we do. We fortify the flour in America, and we fortify cereals because, well, frankly, they don't have enough of a vitamin content. So we're trying to make up for the deficiencies that refining the foods causes. And what they're saying here, I'll read what they say. They say that more than 10 million American children are getting too much vitamin A. More than 13 million get too much zinc. And nearly 5 million get too much niacin, write the report's authors. They say that can have negative consequences for a kid's well-being. So problems that they cite, they say that too much vitamin A can cause osteoporosis, it can cause liver disease, and it can cause birth defects. And so well, what are we talking about here? Well, we're talking about much higher doses of vitamin A that can be found in these children's cereals. Yes, vitamin A at very high doses can be toxic, but how many 7-year-olds are going to be getting pregnant? How many 7-year-olds are going to take enough vitamin A to promote osteoporosis? There's a finding in postmenopausal women who take very high doses of vitamin A, perhaps more than 25,000 international units of vitamin A, not beta carotene, but vitamin A, that may increase the risk of osteoporosis. Well, we're nowhere near those levels, and these are kids. And this is not really applicable. Well, what about niacin? Niacin, in very high doses, we know can cause liver toxicity. It's used medicinally to lower cholesterol, and one of the things you have to watch is liver function. And so what they're relying upon are very paltry RDIs, recommended dietary intake, set by the government. And what they're saying is that kids or smaller adults and they're smaller than adults, and the percentage of the RDI that's on the package is applicable to the adult RDIs and not children's RDIs, and therefore they claim that since kids are pint-sized, they should be subject to lower RDIs. Well, I say, you know, these cereals, as problematic as they are, not really that healthy as breakfast foods, at least they're adding a smattering of vitamins and minerals to these cereals, which probably is to the good, because so many kids are eating really poor junk food diets, and that they're getting a little bit of extra zinc or vitamin A, some B vitamins. That's probably to their benefit, although these are certainly the poorest quality, cheapest vitamins around, not necessarily high quality, well-processed natural vitamins. But I'm not a big fan anyway of giving kids lots of vitamins. I think chewable vitamins are a bad idea because the vitamin C in chewable vitamins takes the enamel off your teeth. I don't think kids need to take a lot of vitamins. I think what kids need to take is maybe some omega-3 fatty acids. Most kids don't like to eat fish. They find it taste is a little funky. They don't get enough omega-3s that help them with developing brain and help to reduce inflammation in their body and improve their cardiovascular risk and reduce risk of insulin resistance. So omega-3 supplements for kids are a good idea. Maybe some additional vitamin D, because virtually nobody gets adequate vitamin D in this country. And perhaps some probiotics, because too many kids, frankly, get too many antibiotics. And they need to replenish their intestinal flora. But high-dose megavitamins for kids, probably a bad idea. Vitamins on cereals, probably innocuous, but they grabbed a headline, breakfast bombshell, vitamin overload in cereals may be making kids sick. And rightly so, Kellogg's spokespeople, who generally I don't side with, were quick to retaliate. They say the report ignores a great deal of the nutrition science and consumption data showing that without fortification of foods such as ready-to-eat cereals, many children would not get enough vitamins and minerals in their diets. Well, maybe a better idea than fortifying ready-to-eat breakfast cereals is to give kids real food for breakfast, not highly refined grain products that bear little relationship to what humans should be subsisting on. I'll rest my case on that note. Let's take a call now from John. John's in New Jersey. Welcome.
Yes, good afternoon, Doctor.
How you doing?
I have a question. I have a relative who had was complaining of symptoms, swollen joints, transient pain in the joints, and accompanied by spiking fever. And it was diagnosed as Still's disease.
Still's disease, yeah.
I've never heard of it. Is there anything you could tell me about it or any recommended nutritional approach you should be taking in conjunction with their normal medical doctor?
Yeah, I'm not sure that Still's disease requires a different kind of nutritional approach than the general approach that's used for arthritis. But it's actually, is this an adult or a child?
An adult, 60-year-old.
Okay, it's actually kind of a rare type of arthritis. It's actually an old term, Still's disease. It's an infectious type of arthritis that may be related to, going back to my medical school knowledge here, that is caused by strep, and it may be accompanied by a fever, although they don't precisely know the cause of this. It's an inflammatory arthritis similar to rheumatoid arthritis, and the treatment is pretty much the same as the treatment for rheumatoid arthritis. And I think that this is a person who really ought to look at their diet. I think that even, you know, eating really lightly and fasting can be beneficial for rheumatoid arthritis patients. It takes the inflammation right down. You know, like a light juice fast is sometimes really a good way to start treating rheumatoid arthritis. You can't sustain yourself on that type of diet. So when you come back and eat regular food, you may be on something like a paleo diet, avoiding most common allergens like wheat, dairy, corn. Of course, we test our patients for intolerance to certain foods. You can even be intolerant to something like beef. It's possible. Also lots of fish oil, higher doses of vitamin D help put out the fire, curcumin, boswellin, Sometimes probiotics help to change the intestinal balance because that makes a difference in arthritis. These are some of the things that we might use. A product called Caprex, which is made by Metagenics. That's a company that dispenses supplements to doctors, so mostly you can't get it from health food stores or internet sites. And these are some of the things that we might do with a patient who has Still's disease. I would treat it very much like I would treat rheumatoid arthritis.
Should she look at food allergies as a...
No, absolutely. Yeah, that's what I said. Absolutely should look at food allergies. But, you know, one way of doing this on your own is to try an elimination diet, see if the symptoms die down. Okay?
Yeah.
All right. Good call. Thanks for calling. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.
Why do I use the Spry Dental Defense System? Because it tastes great.
Because fillings are ugly.
There are a lot of reasons to use the Spry Dental Defense System, a complete line of oral care products such as toothpaste, mouthwash, gum, mints, and more, made with 100% xylitol. But the best reason is because it works. And because it's all natural, Spry is 100% safe for kids. There are even Spry products developed especially for your children and toddlers.
Because my dental hygienist told me to.
Because it's all natural.
So ask for Spry by name whenever you buy toothpaste, mouthwash, gum, mints, or anything else for your mouth. And make sure you're receiving all the benefits of 100% xylitol products.
Because I want a great smile, duh. Why do I use Spry? Because it works.
The Spry Dental Defense System. Great taste, less fillings. For information or to purchase Spry, visit SpryDental.com.
Available at Whole Foods, Vitamin Shoppe, and other fine natural products retailers.
A regular dose of Intelligent Medicine injected directly into your inbox. Subscribe to Dr. Hoffman's free newsletter. Just go to drhoffman.com.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Brain fog. You know, I know it's not as serious a problem as cancer or heart disease, but it is a prevalent problem. And not a day goes by at the Hoffman Center that I don't hear about brain fog as being a concern of one or another of my patients, often many times a day. So if you're suffering from brain fog, this item might be of some use to you. Gluten-free diet relieves brain fog in patients with celiac disease. In this study, they found that individuals with celiac disease often experience brain fog in addition to intestinal problems. Okay, so you don't have to just have, you know, bloating or diarrhea or pain or cramps. A lot of people these days are checking in with celiac disease and gluten intolerance, and the symptoms are mental. That's one of the reasons why Dr. Perlmutter's book, Grain Brain, is so popular. It's a bestseller. There's a relationship between grain consumption, particularly gluten grains, and mental processing in a lot of people. Not everyone. You know, I think it's overdone. Not everyone has to be gluten-free. Some people are fine on gluten. This month, we're going to do, next month, we're going to do an interview with Dr. Alessio Fasano, who's one of the world's experts on gluten intolerance. You'll find it at drhoffman.com under our podcasts. He's written a great new book about gluten intolerance. But the study shows that adhering to a gluten-free diet can lead to improvements in cognition. The findings indicate that ridding the diet of gluten may help address problems that celiac disease patients can experience related to attention, memory, and other mental tasks. So, look, this is nothing's 100%, but if this is a problem you're encountering, think about going gluten-free. Check it out. See if it works for you. All right, let's talk to Betty, who's from La Crosse, Wisconsin. Welcome, Betty.
Are you on?
Betty, can you turn down your radio in the background?
I got to turn my radio down.
Yeah, go.
Yes.
Hey, Betty, how you doing?
Good. What do you feel about vitamin C?
Well, what do you think about vitamin C?
Well,
you have some concerns about vitamin C?
The reason I'm calling you, this friend of mine, she talked to her pharmacist one day, and she happened to mention that she was taking the vitamin C, and he says, well, why are you taking vitamin C? Mm-hmm. He says, you don't need that. And then she went to her doctor, she asked him, and he says, vitamin C does absolutely nothing for you.
Wow.
And I've been taking it all my life.
It's amazing. You know, they just discovered that vitamin C does absolutely nothing for you. These, you know, experts at, in La Crosse, you know, and it's absolutely not the case.
Well, that's what I said to her.
That's what we're up against. You know, we who, you know, believe and have experienced the benefits of supplementation, we're still up against a lot of resistance. And you have to understand that the conventional training of doctors and to some extent their medical journals prejudices them against supplement taking. Now, I have to say, though, that vitamin C is not the panacea that was once thought to be. I really don't believe that super high dose vitamin C for everyone is the answer to everything from the common cold to cancer. There are studies that show that vitamin C has some protective effects against colds and respiratory infections, but you know, clearly, you know, I wish I had a buck for everyone taking high dose of vitamin C and they come down with something. It's partially effective, not 100%. And you know, similarly for cancer, oral vitamin C probably doesn't do all that much. It may have some slight preventive effect, but if you've got cancer, taking tons of vitamin C orally isn't going to make your cancer go away. We use intravenous vitamin C for our patients who have cancer, and that's actually, there's some pretty nice studies now suggesting that it can slow or even halt the progression of many types of cancer. So there, it has to be given intravenously at much higher doses than you could take by mouth, but no, I would not say stop taking your vitamin C. I still think that vitamin C has got you know, some real bona fides, for sure.
I only take the 500. I don't take the 1,000 milligrams.
And, you know, I'll make another point there. And I'm trying to look at it scientifically and objectively, is I now believe that the people who are taking super high doses of vitamin C, you know, they want to take 10, 15,000 a day, that they may be wasting their money to some extent, and also courting the risk of gastrointestinal problems, because at that high dose, it's likely to irritate your stomach or run right through you. Studies show that you can only absorb about 500, possibly up to 1,000 at a time. So if you take, you know, 5,000 at once, you're only going to absorb 500. My suggestion for people who want to take vitamin C is to take 500 frequently throughout the day, because it runs out of you very quickly. So if you want full protection, take it morning, noon, and night. And then you'll get pretty adequate coverage in terms of higher doses of vitamin C. Vitamin C has lots of health benefits. The studies keep substantiating the health benefits. But obviously, you know, your pharmacist and your doctor are not reading the studies. And that's one of the reasons why you have to listen to shows like this and, you know, check out my website at drhoffman.com, because we'll provide you with, you know, the real deal. If it turns out that vitamin C is not beneficial, I'll be the first to announce it. But, you know, they're speaking from a bias, not from a scientific perspective on this. So we're up against that a lot. All right. Speaking of a bias, when we return, we're going to talk about some of the blowback from Dr. Oz's disastrous congressional testimony. He went down to Washington thinking he was going to be a hero, and he was ambushed by Congress for his advocacy of nutritional supplements, especially in the weight loss realm. We'll hear more about the blowback from that particular incident when we return. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. This is Intelligent Medicine.
This traffic report from the bloodstream brought to you by Kyolic Aged Garlic Extract. Well, that inbound blood flow is really slowing down now due to plaque from cholesterol, but help's on the way from Kyolic. More than 750 peer-reviewed research studies indicate that Kyolic not only keeps circulation moving smoothly, it also helps improve a number of cardiovascular risk factors. Kyolic provides powerful antioxidants that help keep your arteries healthy. It reduces homocysteine, a risk factor for heart disease. Unlike other garlic products, Kyolic Aged Garlic Extract is made from 100% organically grown garlic, is completely odorless, and won't upset your stomach. With all of these heart-healthy benefits, it's no surprise that Kyolic is the best-selling garlic supplement in the world. Look for Kyolic at Vitamin Shoppe, Whole Foods, Sprouts, GNC, and fine health food stores everywhere. Help keep your system stay humming along with Kyolic Aged Garlic Extract today.
For more intelligent medicine, download our free podcast at drhoffman.com.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine, 888-302-3684. That's our number. And A couple of weeks ago, Dr. Oz went down to Washington, Mehmet Oz, host of his eponymous program, the Dr. Oz Show, and testified before Congress. And he probably was looking forward to it. They conferred this great honor upon him that he could come to Washington and he could testify as an expert on the supplement industry. But no, it turned out to be an ambush. They attacked him for supporting the use of poorly studied supplements for weight loss and sensationalizing their use, talking about miracle cures and fat busters. And I talked about this in a couple of podcasts. I also talked about it last week, so I won't belabor you with that situation. But there's been some blowback, and it has to do with the John Oliver show. John Oliver is a British humorist commentator, sort of along the lines of John Stewart. And he has a show on HBO, which conveniently follows a very, very popular show. And so his ratings are sky high. And he does humorous commentaries on the news. And last week, he took to task Dr. Oz for being over the top in his claims about vitamins and supplements. And it was funny because John Oliver is a skillful guy, and it was really humorous. And I kind of went with it at first. I thought, well, he's kind of poking fun at Dr. Oz. And then I started to get upset by it because John Oliver basically started parroting the party line of supplement foes, people who believe that supplements are worthless, that supplements are dangerous, that they're badly in need of regulation. How can we possibly let this situation exist in America to allow supplements to be unregulated, and so on and so on and so forth? And I thought, wow, you know, he's really skillful at delivering this humorous diatribe about supplements, but he's got all his facts wrong. And so in an effort to apply a corrective to this, let me address people who might have seen this and people who like John Oliver. And ordinarily, I like him. I think he's a funny guy. He's a skillful guy, makes fun of people in the news. But the supplement industry is highly regulated. It's regulated under something called DSHEA, the Dietary Supplement Health and Education Act. Manufacturing facilities that make supplements need to be GMP certified. And the supplement industry has been very responsible, the vast majority of them, in complying with good manufacturing procedures. They have spotless, shiny labs that really look like, for all the world, like pharmaceutical laboratories where people wear caps so there's no contamination, and there's shiny stainless steel equipment, wonderful facilities. So, you know, here's this guy launching this tirade about vitamins and supplements. I just don't think he knows much about the supplement business. I don't think he's ever set foot in a supplement manufacturing facility. I think he was handed some notes by his producers or his writers. And so he's guilty of the very self-same excesses that Dr. Oz is guilty of. I think Dr. Oz didn't know that much about weight loss supplements, but he was told by his producers that this would guarantee big ratings. And he said, okay, I'll go with it. You know, he's kind of a easygoing guy. And he said, yeah, you know, what's good for the show? He's patriotic. He wants to get good ratings, stay in the air. And similarly, John Oliver, who teed off against him, is guilty of the same lackadaisical approach to supervising the content of his own show. So, I'm not going to stand up for Dr. Oz's advocacy of dubious supplements like raspberry ketones and green coffee bean extract and Garcinia Cambogia. I think they may have a slight effect, but the studies are very limited, and it's certainly misleading to tell people that they are miraculous fat busters. They work for some people, and maybe there's a placebo effect. People who take a certain supplement and they embark on a healthy program, diet and exercise, great. more power to them. But to claim that they're magic fat busters, that's a little over the top. Similarly, John Oliver with his attack on the supplement industry, way over the top, not right. And you know, and that's the unfortunate blowback of the Dr. Oz situation. Dr. Oz has been a great advocate for natural and alternative approaches. Ultimately, is now he's now fortifying the forces of reaction against the very thing that he wants to promote because of sloppy science and improper vetting of the subjects that he wants to put out on his show. So, you know, I try to stay clear of mistakes like that because you undermine your own credibility when you get behind something that doesn't work. And, you know, that's the unfortunate blowback of the Dr. Oz controversy. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about the benefits of garlic plus your questions, 888-302-3684. And this is Intelligent Medicine.
Taking an omega-3 has become part of my daily routine, but I did have some concerns about the environment and, quite frankly, the occasional fishy burp back. So I looked around and discovered a new eco-friendly and vegetarian alternative to fish oil, Chia Omega. While it's no secret growing older can be a challenge, my doctor stresses the importance of omega-3s in helping to achieve and maintain a healthy lifestyle throughout all the stages of my life. I discovered that many health experts encourage supplementation with omega-3s to help support cardiovascular health, joint comfort, and healthy cognition. Chia Omega is a high-quality, all-natural, plant-based line of supplements made from chia seed oil. Chia seeds are the richest and most sustainable natural sources of ALA omega-3 on the planet, containing even more than fish or flax. Having choices concerning my health and making a conscientious change benefiting the environment feels empowering. That's why I switched to Chia Omega. You can get essential formulas Chia Omega at Vitamin Shoppe and other fine health food stores everywhere.
DrHoffman.com, your portal for cutting-edge information on health and nutrition.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. We got answers for you. If you call us, 888-302-3684. Christina, welcome.
Yes, hi. I just recently had a checkup with my doctor, and he says that I have too much protein in my kidneys. Now, how this overload of protein, I think it's why I'm urinating every couple of hours, and it's like driving me crazy.
What does he say you should do about it?
I don't know. I'm just how to eliminate the protein.
So imparting information to patients, I think, is an important skill. Mm-hmm. So he should explain to you, number one, what are the implications of this? Does this mean that you have a disease? Does this mean that this is a call to action in terms of further testing? Or is this a call to action in terms of changing your diet? I mean, it's unclear to me what's happening from what you're describing.
Well, the thing I was describing to him, that I keep urinating, so...
Right.
That urine is caused because there's a lot of protein in my urine, or...
And he didn't answer that question? He just kind of shrugged his shoulders and,
it's one of those hectic, you know, medical offices, and I didn't get a chance to hear...
How much time did you spend with your doctor on that subject?
Less than 5 minutes. I know that much.
Less than 5 minutes. So he just said, you have high protein. What did he say? Come back to get this further checked?
I guess probably for the further check. I don't know what to do at this point. Can I do anything on my own?
Look, folks, this is an illustration of the kind of medical system that we're up against. Is the guy doctor just makes this offhand comment, there's too much protein in your urine. Okay, let me suppose what's happening here without the facts. I think what the doctor may be talking about is that you have an elevated BUN or creatinine. BUN is blood, urea, and nitrogen. It's actually not protein. It's actually the breakdown products of protein from your diet. But it isn't necessarily related to your diet. You can eat tons of protein and have a normal BUN, or you can eat inadequate protein and have a pretty good BUN. Sometimes there's a dietary component, but often it's about your kidney's filtration ability. Another thing that goes up sometimes when your kidneys aren't working properly is your creatinine. So it's the BUN creatinine. And in particular, the ratio of those things that determines whether you have kidney problems. Now, usually, once that starts happening, you start wanting to run other tests. You do tests to see if there's leakage of protein into the urine. That would be proteinuria. That would be a sign of kidney damage. We do tests possibly to look at the kidneys. We might, if you complain of frequent urination, maybe it's time to check and see if you've got bacteria in your urine, a urinary tract infection, something may be going on there. Or your urinary frequency may be unrelated. It just may mean, you know, you're peeing more often, but it's the filtration ability of your kidneys is changing. There's a lot of variables here. I don't know precisely what to tell you. If you have high blood pressure, it needs to be better controlled. If you have high blood sugar, you need to control your blood sugar better, because the two major causes of what appears to be happening with you, slight tendency movement towards kidney failure or, you know, kidney insufficiency, inability of the kidney to filter, the two main factors are high blood pressure and high blood sugar. So those need to be addressed. And if you're carrying extra weight, a good program to optimize your weight might make a difference. Is it about dietary protein? Well, you know, sometimes they say, well, stop eating protein because then your protein will go there. Well, if you stop eating protein, you'll often substitute starchy foods and sugary foods, and that will increase your blood sugar, which definitely is going to damage your kidneys. So I don't tell patients generally with mild kidney insufficiency to dramatically curtail their protein, because they're going to go the other way, eat the wrong foods. So, you know, there's a range of possibilities here. Boy, I wish I were your doctor, because I would love to spend more time with you, explore what's going on, and head off problems. It sounds like the approach your doctor's taking is, yeah, you're headed for some kidney problems. Come back in a few months, and we'll see if it's worse. And if it really gets worse, we'll put you on dialysis. You know, that approach is, unfortunately, the way that medicine goes these days. And really, you know, we really want to undertake a more preventive approach. I wish I could help you more. All right, this just in. And it's really good news, because one of our good sponsors, Kyolic Aged Garlic Extract, they do their homework. And, you know, some of the companies just take the money and run. You know, you buy their supplements and they just put it in the bank. The company that makes Kyolic, which is Wakanaga, big Japanese company, they reinvest in research to document the benefits of Kyolic Aged Garlic Extract. Now, it's not just, you know, garlic. It's aged garlic extract, which has unique properties. Aging it changes its chemical composition. So they wanted to study it. Four clinical studies investigated aged garlic extract's potential to decrease coronary plaque in patients with metabolic syndrome. And what they found was that they could slow the progression of total plaque accumulation by as much as 80% in patients who just took a couple of pills of the cardiovascular formula of aged garlic extract. By the way, I take that myself, one pill twice daily, and it may have additional benefits in terms of not just heart protection, but immune support. Aged garlic extract inhibited oxidative stress and the formation of advanced glycation end products. They're sometimes abbreviated as AGES. Advanced glycation end products age the body and age the arteries. They're called AGES, advanced glycosylation end products. AGES are harmful, and advanced garlic extract also increases superoxide dismutase, catalase, and glutathione, and scavenges harmful free radicals, according to the most recent study. So great stuff, a unique product, and we're happy to see that they are sponsoring research, but good research. This is done at UCLA, at the David Geffen School of Medicine at UCLA, by a professor of medicine, Dr. Matthew Budoff. He's also director of cardiac CT scanning. So this is a test that we advocate for our patients as a way of determining whether you're headed to heart disease. It's called the EBT heart scan or the CT heart scan. And it tells you not just if you have high cholesterol. Okay, high cholesterol may or may not be associated with heart disease. Many other factors lead to heart disease. It actually tells you if you're beginning to have plaque in your coronary arteries. And this study establishes that it doesn't just lower cholesterol or, you know, change one or another parameter. It actually helps to reduce the formation of plaque in your arteries by as much as 80%. Very cool. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.
A regular dose of Intelligent Medicine injected directly into your inbox. Subscribe to Dr. Hoffman's free newsletter. Just go to drhoffman.com.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Let's take another call from Kitty in New Jersey. How you doing?
Okay, thank you, doctor, for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm experiencing muscle pain in my upper back. The chiropractor says it's muscle spasms.
Yeah.
And it's due to poor posture.
Yeah.
What happened, I had two very bad knees. Of course, I've had replacements since then. And
yeah.
Due to trying to compensate for the pain, I was throwing my back out of whack.
Yeah.
So now I'm experiencing these muscle spasms, and they are so sharp, and I'm at my wit's end. I don't know what to do.
Yeah, you know, this is a really common problem, and it, you know, certainly gets worse as people age. They're more prone to muscle spasms. And, you know, what, from a medical standpoint, you know, I don't have like a magic vitamin that makes muscle spasms go away, nor is there an effective medication for doing that. And really numb yourself out with pain meds, but that's, you know, that's a real dangerous path to tread because you get addicted to these meds. The antispasmodic medications I don't find helpful because they just, the muscle that they mostly paralyze is your brain, you know, not your muscles in your back. So what I suggest for patients who are in trouble with muscle spasms is oral magnesium, and that works sort of, but really what works best is intravenous magnesium. My patients are in really trouble with spasm. We give them intravenous magnesium, which really relaxes muscles. The magnesium is fantastic at high doses. If you can absorb it orally, fine, but some patients don't. They get diarrhea from oral magnesium, and intravenous magnesium can be very helpful. The other thing that I would suggest is review your diet, because they're actually dietary concomitants. You know, some people eat a pro-inflammatory diet. They don't get enough anti-inflammatory foods. Also, I find that food intolerances can actually promote muscle spasms, muscle aches. And by eliminating a food that you're reacting to, you can really get a benefit. Avoid sugar, avoid caffeine. Caffeine is certainly something that promotes spasms, and certain medications can do that too. We'd have to review your medication list because some of these things deplete critical minerals and can cause spasm. So there you have it. Lots of fish oil too. Fish oil is great. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Thanks for joining us. Make sure you visit drhoffman.com for all your health information needs. Intelligent medicine is our mission, and we're trying to get the word out. Please join us next week for Intelligent Medicine. Until then, have a great weekend.